This is World Cricket Weekly Talk, presented by Teachers Blended Scotch Whisky, the spirit of achievement. I'm Nigel Reid, and joined now by what I can only describe as cricket's voice of reason. Faraz Sarawat writes for the Toronto Star, Wisden and Crick Info, and what he doesn't know about cricket probably isn't worth knowing. Faraz, you have followed cricket around the world and around the corner for many years. Already on this show, we've spoken to the new president of Cricket Canada, a shiny new pin at the top of the organisation, and like any new president, he has grand plans for the future. Are you impressed? Are you looking forward to his execution? Or have you seen all this before in his sport and sports administration cyclical, and one wonders whether or not he and his new cohorts will be able to deliver what they promise?
Well, I'm hopeful that this administration will actually do better than some of its predecessors. I've known Ravin Murthy a pretty long time now, and you know, I've watched him as a VP in Cricket Canada for a number of years. And when he was running the the senior team, that's the last time that Canada qualified for the World Cup. And I thought the team that he had put together was probably the best team that Canada had ever assembled. That went into the World Cup qualifiers in, I guess it was, 2009. So, you know, he has a track record of actually doing some good work. As president, let's see how things go, because now the job is a lot wider, you know, a lot more people to kind of keep on track and work with. And I'm still hopeful that he'll do well. I mean, you know, in the interview that you just did with him, he comes across knowledgeable, passionate, articulate. He will present well when meeting with people outside of Cricket Canada. And, Cricket Canada has actually suffered from that a little bit, not always putting its best foot forward. So I think that on that front, things will certainly improve.
What is his main job over the next couple of years? Who knows what will happen when his term comes to a conclusion? What does he need to address in an urgent fashion and try and make progress with for the good of Canadian cricket, whether it's at the elite level or at the grassroots level? Is there a couple of things that he can attack and actually make some real progress in the next year or two?
Well, there are quite a few challenges in front of him, I think, on any front that you could think of, from the performance of the team itself, to the awareness of the sport, to funding issues, to sponsorship issues, to grassroots issues, to where does the Canadian team actually play if it needs to play at home. Even that is never fully settled, you know. So there are lots of challenges that I think lie ahead. Certainly, I mean, I think Ravin spoke very well about what he intends to do. And as he puts it, the story of Canadian cricket is a compelling one and a good one that should resonate with people who control the purse strings, whether it's sponsors or the government of Canada. And, you know, when Ravin told us about the amount of money that Cricket Canada gets, it's actually scandalous. I mean, and how paltry it is.
I'm not sure that there are that many people who have a passing interest know what the number is. And now we know what the number is. I mean, it's almost laughable, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I think badminton probably gets more than twice of what cricket gets in this country. So that's something. And as Ravin said, I mean, this is a team, you know, yes, okay, we look at, in comparison to the full member countries, we don't do well. But how does a Canadian cricket team do in comparison to the Canadian soccer team? How does it do in comparison to other, you know, smaller sports? We qualify for World Cups. You know, that's nothing to sneeze at. Now, obviously, going head-to-head against full member countries, we're not going to do our best. But the thing that concerns me a little bit is that I always thought of Canada, you know, going back a few years, as being the bigger of the smaller teams. You know, when you look at the smaller teams, we're one of the bigger ones. We're starting to slip, you know, and not qualifying for the World T20 is, to me, something to be concerned about. Ireland do very well. Afghanistan have kind of come up, you know, behind everybody and passed everyone by. But, you know, we should still be within the top four, I think, of associate teams, given our pedigree. I mean, we played our first World Cup in 1979. Cricket has deep roots in this country. You know, the upstarts, to me, it's not really acceptable that, you know, the Netherlands or some other team can just pass us by. So I think on that front, we have to, you know, really focus on, yes, the things we do right, but we really have to be honest about the things that haven't worked well. And, you know, team selection is certainly a part of that. But, you know, as Ravin said, there's a focus on schools and grassroots, and all of that is very good, and it will yield results, you know, in the next 10 years or so. But what about, you know, meanwhile, what's going on?
I mean, everybody loves a winner, and not everybody can be one. But as you suggest, Canada has been one of the best of the rest, if you're talking about the associate nations. And it's clear from the most recent few series, the T20 qualifiers themselves, it is slipping down the ladder. And that, of course, is not so attractive to broadcasters or to sponsors or anybody else if you can't cut it when it matters.
Yeah. And now, again, the thing is that, to me, player evaluation has been a big part of the problem in selecting the teams. As I said, 2009, when Ravin Murthy was managing the senior team, that was one of the best teams, or if not the best team, that Canada had ever put on the field. What's happened since then? I mean, I think we've gone into a game with Namibia without a fast bowler. How come we don't have a fast bowler in the team? Where are they? Certainly, if you look around the leagues in Canada, there is somebody who has a new ball in his hand and who can bowl relatively quick. We're not expecting to have, you know, Malcolm Marshall coming down, but you know, somebody who knows how to use a new ball. So to me, you know, if you look at where is the heartland of cricket, it remains Ontario. That's where, you know, the players are. But, you know, do we ever look beyond the Toronto League? That is the biggest and best league in the country, if not the continent. But cricket is played all over Ontario. Are we going out and finding players in other leagues, in other cities of Ontario? You know, there is some effort to find players in Alberta and BC, but I think the net has to be cast wider. We have to be a little bit more creative in how we go about these things.
So the scouting network needs to be extended and done in a more professional manner, you might say. One more point as far as the new president is concerned before you move on. You've spoken to me often on and off air about the fractured nature of cricket in this country. He's now the man at the top of the organization, and there are people who would want to put a target on his back and shoot him. How strong does he have to be able to survive the politics of Canadian cricket over the next couple of years?
Well, that's a very good question, Nigel. I think he has to be very strong. He has to be able to withstand a lot of criticism that's going to come his way. It's inevitable. It will come, you know, and a lot of it will be unfair, but some of it will also be fair. Cricket Canada has historically lacked the maturity to deal with criticism. Everything is seen as personal, and you know, the reactions are unprofessional often, whether it's with journalists or with members of the public or even with players who have criticisms. You know, the reaction hasn't always been the most professional. I think that will change. I don't think it's going to continue in the same way. One of the things I would say to Ravin Murthy is that he has to be his own man. He has a vision for the sport. He has a vision for where cricket is going in this country. He needs to stick to that. He has to essentially show that he is his own man with his own vision and not just a continuation of the previous two presidents.
Talk about partnerships, because the new president himself touched on it, the relationship between Cricket Canada and the West Indies Cricket Board, the way Ireland has prospered as a relationship with the English Cricket Board. How important, in your opinion, is that partnership with a full member, in this case, closest geographically, the West Indies? Is that something to be pursued?
Absolutely. I think that it's essential for the full member countries of the ICC to take responsibility for their area, you know, their corner of the planet, and if there are associate teams there, to kind of help them along, give them, share expertise with them, give players from associate countries the opportunities, you know, to play in, you know, their domestic championships and all of that. And the West Indies Cricket Board has actually been good in that respect, where, you know, Canada has been able to play in their domestic T20 tournament. And even though, you know, the results haven't been that great for the Canadian team, it's still a wonderful opportunity to play with, you know, players who can represent the West Indies. And, you know, other teams also come in, the county side will come in, and so the level of competition is good for us and invaluable, I think, in the development of our players. Now, the downside of that is the West Indies Cricket Board, you know, is, to put it mildly, dysfunctional and has a lot of issues of its own. And, you know, if you're hitching your wagon to that star, you know, there can be some problems there. So I think we have to just make sure that we get all that we can get out of that, not pin everything, you know, to the West Indies Cricket Board, but the expertise that we can get from them, because certainly, you know, in terms of domestic competition for our players, that's one thing. But also, you know, our umpires having an opportunity, to learn, that's something. Just their experience of the game, you know, is something. If West Indies, you know, cricketers can come here and play, I think that's certainly something. It'll raise awareness of the game, get fans involved. So that's all good. But again, you know, I'm a little bit worried sometimes. I mean, I think Ireland have an easier time, you know, the fact that they have the ECB to rely on. Certainly a better partner to have.
Sport and politics, they say, don't mix, and I guess that's part of the problem in the West Indies. They are obviously a group of islands that come together as the West Indies, as the national cricket team. But I was reading about the fact that finally peace has broken out between Chris Gayle and the West Indies Cricket Board, but not without the intervention of prime ministers here and politicians there to say, look what we've managed to do. We've managed to make friends with Chris Gayle again.
Yeah, pathetic. Absolutely pathetic. You know, the fact that you have to get heads of government involved to get a cricket player onto the field is ridiculous. The West Indies, it is staggering that there is a generation of cricket fans, people who've watched cricket their whole lives, who have never seen a good West Indies cricket team, who don't know what a powerhouse the West Indies were. Their cricket has fallen to such an extent that it's mind-boggling. I can't think of any. I mean, every team goes through its ups and downs.
Sure.
You know, there was a time when England, England, number one test side right now, you know, 10 years ago, they were at the very bottom of the test playing nations. But you could still see a way back for them, and they made it back, you know. But with the West Indies, you don't see them becoming the number one or number two, test playing team again, and administrative issues are certainly a part of it. How this Chris Gayle thing should never have been allowed to go on this long.
If you ever wanted to know how good the West Indies were and how dominant a team they were, I'm sure you've seen this film Fire in Babylon, and it's a terrific narrative of that all-conquering test team of what, I guess, the 70s to the early 90s, and talks to a lot of the players that were around at the time, and the four fast bowlers, and Clive Lloyd and Viv Richards, and you think back to that time and you think, how did it ever come unhinged? And maybe it was to do with fractured politics. Maybe, you know, it all just fell away.
Well, I mean, sometimes it comes into more than just athletic ability. It's people being on the same page about, what they're doing. And for the West Indies, I think that was a part of it. It was that they all, had their focus on the same thing, which was to show West Indies cricket in a positive light, to be a dominant force. You know, it wasn't enough to just win. You had to win well. They were, just very cohesive as a team, in spite of the fact that they came from different countries. That's a unique part in sport. You look at other teams around the world, that have done well and have, generally suffer also from a kind of a fractured nature to the team. A Pakistan side is a good example, 1992 World Cup. Imran Khan, under his leadership, put the team together and made them cohesive. And Imran goes, and even though the team is still, has talented players in it, never quite achieved the same level again. So, that's a part of it, I think.
Now, Chris Gayle may well be welcomed back into the West Indies fold, but probably not in time for the Test Series in England. Why? Because, of course, he'll be making plenty of money cracking sixes in the IPL, which is not your favourite subject for us, it's fair to say. I know you're trying to love the Indian Premier League, and I know you're trying to take an interest in it, but it is a competition that does capture the imagination of many. And Chennai and Mumbai and perhaps Gayle's team, Bangalore, will be the big teams again. So you have, I know you've got half an eye on it. What are you seeing in IPL 5 that makes you think that there is something worth turning on the TV set for and getting excited about?
Well, with the IPL, I think one of the great things about the IPL is that you do get to see players, international players from different teams playing together. And that is an attraction. It is for me. Yes, the IPL is a new tournament, and just over the five seasons or so. And it's a question of, well, how do you develop a liking for a team, you know, and how do you feel passionate about a certain team? I mean, does cricket is one of those sports that just the aesthetic appeal of it is enough, you know, that you can watch a cricket match and watch somebody hit a six and enjoy it, doesn't matter what team they're playing for. So the IPL certainly gives you lots of that. One of the things that I think is kind of interesting is that the nature of a 20-over game is such that depth in a team doesn't matter all that much. If you've got a couple of players who come off, that's enough. Now, where depth does help you is that if you've got three players in the team and one of them has an off day, somebody else can step up and do well. So some of the teams that have kind of splashed out on big hitting players, I think, stand to go a lot farther. So Bangalore certainly is one of those teams. I think Delhi is also a really good team. And then Pune can kind of, you know, come behind people and they might not be expecting Pune to do well. So for me, I think that the fact that you've scattered these international class players across the teams and you say, well, it's an open field, anyone can win, yes and no, because one player can come off and change the game. On the other hand, if the tournament is going on for 7-odd weeks, then obviously the team with a lot more depth is going to do well. So I expect that probably the likes of Bangalore or Delhi are going to run away with this.
Fascinating. Always enjoy our chats. Good to see you and thanks for your time.
Thank you, Nigel.
Faraz Sarwat, this is World Cricket Weekly Talk, presented by Teachers Blended Scotch Whisky, the spirit of achievement.